Investing Simplified is brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm with Bo Caldwell, CFP, and Chuck Price, founder and author of Investing Simplified, the book, and the number one bestseller, Your Retirement Made Simple. Chuck Price has been doing estate planning since 1970 and investing in retirement planning since 1975. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated. Investing Simplified is the longest running live financial show in America with a financial advisor and now a CFP, an estate planning attorney, and a CPA to answer your questions for free, and comes to you live from Portland, Oregon on affiliated stations throughout the Pacific Northwest. You can contact Bo or Chuck by visiting PFGWM. Or you can email them with a question at ask@pfgwm.com. Or you can call them right now at 503-417-9595. That's 503-417-9595. And for our long distance and podcast listeners, you can call toll free at 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. Now, the hosts of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price and Bo Caldwell.
Well, good morning and welcome to Investing Simplified. This is your opportunity to call us and ask that question that's been keeping you up at night. I'm Bo Caldwell, CFP, your host today, and here with me is Kevin Stege from Baker Colson. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Bo.
And the host with the most, Chuck Price with Price Financial Group.
Well, good morning and welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Chuck. And normally we start out with a market update, and so I'm going to kick it over to you, Chuck, and let you do your thing with the market update for this week. And it looks like your prediction is coming true.
Well, you know, I got to say, guys, when I shouted off at the end of the year that I believed that in 2019 we would have a double-digit return. So I have already hit my goal. Now, folks, I'm hoping it stays, believe me. But so far, year-to-date, you know, as of yesterday, Friday, the close of Friday, the S&P closed up at 2,775.60. That's up 268 points since the turn of the year. And we are right now up 10.72% on the S&P. Is that not a double-digit return?
It sounds like it by 0.72.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Whether it's 0.1 or 0.200, doesn't matter.
That's right. But isn't this just the December cleanup?
Of course it is.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah. That's okay. My prediction is still right, though.
But you guys look bad for 2018 simply because December had a down month, and so people look at their annualized
statements. Well, like I said, we're going to the new year.
There we go.
We're going to the new year. Hey, now, here's the other thing. The Dow Jones closed up at 25883.25. It's up 10.96. So, again, the oddity of the old, big old guard stocks is outperforming the 500 top growth stocks. So when you take a look at that historically, you're more risk, more reward. NASDAQ and the S&P should outperform the Dow. Doesn't always come true, but it should, based on risk and risk tolerance. Should be more growth opportunity in the more aggressive stocks. So as we look at that and go through, I kind of want to point out here, and I love to do this because I think a lot of people look at the market and hear numbers on the radio or on TV. And here's the thing, folks. If you're on TV, you're trying to sell your program for the people that are paying the advertising. You're not paying it for the listeners because none of us listen by pay-per-view. If we had pure pay-per-view and did away with all the sponsors of the investment shows, believe me, you would hear a different story. You would hear actually hear actual facts and truth. But because they're paid by sponsors and they're paid by people to present a show and make it entertaining because they have to live by the ratings, they're going to tell you whatever they got to tell you to keep their sponsors happy because that's who pays them money. And that's okay, but that is a fact. You need to realize that, because when you sit down and do the numbers yourself, and it's very easy to do, for example, the S&P in 12/31/99 closed at 1,469.25. You can do the math by dividing out. That tells you that the S&P, since the turn of the century, has returned a net return of 4.9% per year. 4.9%. The NASDAQ, over the same period of time, has returned 4.6. Now, again, folks, if you've listened to our show for years, you know risk versus reward. The more risk you take, the more reward you get. Historically, the NASDAQ long-term should be outperforming the S&P 500. But here's the real kicker. If you look at the Dow Jones, the Big 30, and we know they change stocks, and so please, if you call in, I understand they change stocks. It's not always the same. It's not the same 30 that were there at the turn of the century. However, you look at the Dow Jones. The Dow Jones closed on, if I can find my year, 12/31/99 at 11,497.12. It closed at 25,883.25 this Friday. So if you go back and look, that's a return of 6.9%. That means that the Dow Jones is outperforming the S&P and the NASDAQ by almost 40%. That's a pretty good number. Pretty good number. And is historically flip-flopped. So what does that mean? Well, what it means is you really need to have a highly diversified portfolio, and you don't put all your eggs in one basket. And again, our philosophy is if you have an actively managed portfolio and maybe put some of your investments for long-term in good stocks or good aggressive portfolios and leave those alone, you're going to come out well long-term. The key is to have a strategy. And as I've said on this show for the last 10 years, if you don't have a strategy for good markets and bad markets, I could tell you, you'll get exactly what you strategized for. In other words, if you don't have a strategy, you will not be a happy investor. So you got to have a strategy that's going to take care of you in the good times and the bad times. And with that, guys, I could say here about gold, and this is the other thing too, our markets are roaring. So what happens to gold when the markets go up? They go down. It goes down. The thing that's getting me, though, Kevin, and I got to talk to you about this, you know, with the money and the fact that I also want to say that we did go over $22 trillion in debt this past week, which is stupid to me, but that's another story for another time. But, Kevin, you know, in looking at the markets and interest rates, isn't it amazing that with the $22 trillion in debt, the 10-year rate, 10-year bond rate, is 2.66. It actually went down. It's been going down, not up. Yep. Any magical answers as to mathematically why that's happening?
I have no clue what they're doing back there.
I don't think they do either. I think that's been the problem.
Yeah.
But it's kind of interesting because I heard the interest rates on mortgage loans, and they're at a historically very, very low rate still. So if you have not refinanced or paid off a mortgage with a lower loan, I think right now you could still do that. You could still get a very, very good 30-year rate on a loan. So it's kind of crazy with all the debt that we have in this country that the markets are kind of doing that. But that's all I got, guys. Well, any questions?
No, I think it... Excuse me. I think it has a lot to do with, you know, talking about the 10-year note, has a lot to do with the volatility that we have seen in the market. And traditionally, people move, you know, they call it a flight to safety, or people do invest a little bit more in those treasury notes. And as you know, Chuck, and you know, Kevin, but listeners may not know, as you invest more money in bonds, so more money comes in, that drives the interest rate down, right? You'd think. Because, you know, people are buying them and buying them.
Yeah.
There's more demand for them. So.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how here in Oregon, you know, speaking of homes, interest rates and home prices, I saw a headline, I didn't read the article, that for the first time in, I think, 7 years, we actually ooched down a little bit on the home prices.
On the home value?
Yeah. Value. And, you know, with the interest rates, and then I'm curious to see, and I think it'll be hard to quantify, but if you know, Oregon or other states put in caps on the rent increases. And, you know, most of our businesses that and landlords that we do tax returns for, we've all been having to fill out a new form for the city of Portland to basically join a database so that they can, number one, start charging a fee for you in the future. But then number two, so they have an inventory of landlords to be able to enforce limits on rent increases. It's going to be interesting to see how those things start impacting home prices. Is that going to mean, landlords are going to raise rents before these kick in, and so renters may be looking to buy more? Who knows? You know, sure. I mean, everyone has a different opinion on it. It'll just be interesting to see how that works. And I'm sure our listeners, they have their opinions too. And if you have a thought or a comment, we do welcome your calls at 503-417-9595 or 877-733-1011.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, as they enforce that rent control, I think that's the term that you
rent
use,
control.
Right?
There
rent
we go.
Control.
Yeah.
If they do go that way, are landlords going to be, I don't want to call it forced, but they're almost forced to raise them now, and maybe more than they were before? You may have had a relationship with a landlord, you may be a long term tenant and have had very little mm-hmm. in terms of raising rents. They, you know, you have to raise the rent at some point, I think, to stay viable just because of inflation and, you know, other issues. But.
Yeah. And, you know, what's interesting is, you know, I have a number of landlords or clients that happen to have a rental or two rentals, what have you, some more than others. And, boy, I really see that when there's a good renter in there, my landlords, they don't raise the prices. They want to keep that renter in there. And, you know, I mean, to me, the market, you have a good renter, you keep it low and it keeps them in there. I mean, to me, it's self-correcting. You have a bad renter, you kind of want to get them out of there and stuff. So, I mean,
you know, you're exactly right. I was talking to a client of ours the other day who has a lot of rental units, and he's way under market. And he was looking at doing some refinancing and buying another piece of property, and the people doing the loan said to him, "Well, your loan to value is way low. You should raise the rents." Mm-hmm. And he said, "You know, I haven't had a vacancy in years. Why would I raise the rents?" He said, "I'll raise them a little bit, mm-hmm. but I'm not going to put myself in a situation where I've got really good tenants, and I want to push them out in the street, and raise the rates."
Yep.
Because getting the cash flow is more important to him than raising the rates.
I rarely see a residential rental that reports a profit on a tax return. The only ones that typically do are going to be your commercial rentals, and they're charging a business fair market value, and a business typically has the cash flow to pay that higher rent. Or the person has owned the rental for so long, they've paid the mortgage off, and they do show a profit. But usually, for tax purposes, rentals break even, and your benefit is the growth in the value of the property over time. So, and in a sense, the renter has paid your mortgage for you, and that's kind of the benefit. So that's typically what I see. I rarely see a residential rental.
That makes a lot of sense to me.
Profit.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You know, that's what you hear, the reason that folks buy it, and if they're renting it out, is to cover the mortgage and the taxes and stuff.
Yeah.
So that's interesting thought. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back with the tax investigator. But again, give us a call if you have that question that's keeping you up at night. We'd love to talk to you all day, but really, we want to talk about what you want to talk about. So give us a call at 503-417-9595 or 877-733-1011. We'll be right back.
We do Investing Simplified.
Are you concerned about your retirement income? Do you really understand how your Social Security benefits work. Price Financial Group Wealth Management has helped many seniors in Oregon and Washington maximize their Social Security benefits at retirement through using their Social Security seminar on demand. Now you can watch this valuable information in the comfort of your home by just going to www.pfgwm.com and click on the free Social Security kit. If you are serious about your retirement planning, you cannot afford to miss this opportunity. After all, you have invested your hard-earned dollars into Social Security all your working years. So shouldn't you get the maximum return you can get from those dollars? The future can be scary, and without a plan, it can be even scarier, especially when facing the unknown. What you don't know can hurt you. Get your free Social Security kit at pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000.
Here's your opportunity to ask Kevin Stege, CPA and shareholder of the Baker Colson CPA firm, that tax question that's been keeping you up at night. You can call Kevin, 503-417-9595, or toll free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's the CPA with the tax answers, Kevin Stege.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified, and during this time of year, I've considered changing my segment from the tax investigator to, as one client told me, she called me a tax animal this time of year. So I'm thinking maybe, you know, because we're kind of nocturnal, you know, we've kind of got, you know, crazy look in our eyes, looking over our shoulder. So
Is that because you're in a box for about 3 months when you're doing tax returns?
Something like that.
Okay. Okay, so there's a lack of sleep, too.
Exactly.
Because you've been at work, you know, working 12, 15-hour days.
Exactly right, exactly. But anyway, I thought I would bring you guys in early on this segment. I do have an interesting court case to chat about. At the end of it. But before I bring you guys on, I want to just briefly bring up a program that the IRS is looking to expand, and I think it's a good idea. If you have been the victim of identity theft, you have probably received correspondence from the IRS that, well, first off, you have filled out a form that goes in with your tax return that identifies that you're a victim of identity theft or potentially could be, and they put you in this program called IP PIN program, Identity Protection Personal Identification Number. And they issue you a number that you need to use to e-file your tax return the following year so they know that it's you. And so anybody who's been a victim of identity theft and you've alerted the IRS, you're probably part of that program. And now they're expanding it to voluntarily, in about 7 or 8 states, voluntarily allow you to be part of that. And it requires 2-step authentication, and you can go online and do that. We're not part of that program yet, but I thought I'd just in Oregon, but California, Nevada are. And it's something to be looking forward to in the future. I think it's a good idea. So that's something to look out for.
That makes a lot of sense. And is that something that your CPA would help you handle? Like, if you're working with a CPA, they're handling that IP PIN, or
absolutely. If you're e-filing, your e-filer is going to need that number, and it's mailed to you from the IRS. The voluntary program, I believe, you actually get that number online and use it yourself, or provide it to your tax preparer.
Perfect. That makes a lot of sense. I think it's a really good idea. And we'll take a quick step away, and we have a caller. Kathy is on the line, has an estate tax return question, so it's perfect timing with the tax animal on the line. Kathy, you're on the line with the tax animal, Kevin Stege.
Well, thank you. Kevin, I have a question in regards to an estate tax return.
Yes.
My sister is the executor for her aunt's estate, and or our aunt's estate, and the CPA has said that the estate tax year will end at the end of this month.
Okay.
So he says that the beneficiaries are going to pay the taxes for the estate according to the amount of their part that they've received from the estate, and that he will be mailing out 1099s for them, and also sending money from the estate to pay those respective taxes.
Okay.
My question is, we don't really understand, you know, our personal taxes, of course, are due on April 15th.
Mm-hmm.
But with the estate tax year being like ending mm-hmm. February 28th, when must they send out the 1099s, and do they have like the 3.5 months after to complete mm-hmm. giving out the money from the estate? I just don't understand that.
Ah, well, first off, anytime you want a job, you've described that scenario so well, you can come work for us anytime. So,
oh no!
you absolutely have described exactly what you needed, and you're asking the right questions. And is this the first year of the estate?
I hope it's the only year okay. of the estate.
Okay. Well, interestingly, first off, the form you'll be getting from the estate is called, instead of a 1099, it's called a K-1, and that's yep. what's going to pass out your share of the income or loss. And because it is a fiscal year end, February, and because it is 2019, you are actually going to report that K-1 on your tax return that the fiscal year ends. So that K-1 that you get from the estate is going to go on your 2019 tax return.
Yes, we understand that.
Okay, excellent. And so 2018, you should be just fine to file. 2019, you should be getting your K-1 within probably 3.5 months or so. They may get it out here early, even before, you know, this it's due because they're working on it. But they do have that 3.5 months to get that to you. And then you'll just have that K-1 and you'll save it for your 2019 taxes, and it will have a box and some codes, and it'll tell you exactly where to put those numbers on your 2019.
Yes, I'm familiar with K-1s.
Yes.
But I was trying to figure out the estate's part of it. Do they have, how long do they have, the 3.5 months after the end of the fiscal to pay out and pay out the money that they're going to give to the beneficiaries to
I
pay
see.
Their taxes?
It's a distributions can happen anytime. If this is going to, unfortunately, if it's going to continue, they may not pay out money. But if they're trying to wrap it up in 1 year, they have their tax filing deadline is 3.5 months, but they only have 65 days after the end of their tax year to effectively make distributions for the prior year. So they only give 65 days. So if your calendar year in, that usually runs around March 5th. I don't have the calendar for a February.
May 4th.
Somewhere like that. Exactly right. Yeah.
Okay. So, 65 days after February 28th, they have to zero out and pay, give the tax money to the beneficiaries.
They don't have to. They can, and that would help simplify the estate filing to hopefully allow 1 year, a first and a final is what we call it. Tax return, but if there's still assets and if there's still significant assets, then that year won't close, or that 1 year won't close the estate, and it will continue.
Okay, well that really helps, and thank you so much, Kevin. Thank you. Have a good day.
Absolutely, very good call and question.
Yeah, thank you, Kathy. Great question. We have another caller on the line, Bob, who has a question about redemption of I bonds, which is a very prevalent question. I can't tell you, Bob, we get this question a lot. I talk to a lot of folks who ask the question, or at least about I-bonds, so I'd love to hear what your question is about I-bonds.
Okay. These I-bonds were purchased almost 20 years ago, and so they have quite a bit of interest. And I was wondering, well, a couple of things. First of all, since we have lower tax rates now for a few years, would it be a good idea to start redeeming part of these each year to lower the tax bite?
Well, it depends on your tax situation. You know, in general, it is good to spread out income and not take a huge lump sum in one year. So I would typically look at your full tax situation, you know, see if you have excess deductions. Maybe you have a capital, you know, loss that we can utilize some of these against a little, you know, up to $3,000, but or various deductions. So it really depends on your personal tax situation, but in general, you can spread it out, and that's helpful.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but you can actually pay the taxes on the interest even if you're not redeeming the bonds, right? You can pay it as you accrue the interest. Is that correct?
That is right.
So that's another way possibly, Bob, too, if you don't want to get rid of them, because right now, you know, EE bonds are paying like, what, 0.1% or something like that. They're a fraction of a percent. So if these are 20-year-old bonds, they probably have a pretty good interest rate still on them.
They are right now. They're earning about 5.75%. We are standard deduction people, and there was $60,000 put into them, and right now the interest is about $58,000. We have no deductions, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to spread it out. But I also don't know what to do with the money, because if we put them back into, say, CDs, then we incur state tax. If we put them back into I bonds, well, that'll take care of, there'll be no more interest for the rest of my lifetime. But then the interest rate is like half of what it is now.
Right. I would say even less. I think we may be shooting high on the half of what you're getting now. You're getting that's a real good interest rate on there. Yeah, that's a good question. In terms of looking at those safe money investments, a lot of times right now, you're right, you can't find a great interest rate. There are other options out there. And are you currently working with an advisor? I would imagine you are, if you had that, you know, that sort of I-bond experience. That would be something to chat with them about, some other options if you do redeem those bonds. I think you don't have to, like I said, I don't think you have to redeem them. If they are still accruing interest, I think you can kind of spread some of those interest out, right?
I have the option of redeeming all of them or just a portion of them. And they can be held for another, well, until they're 30 years old. And then I just recently found out that the Treasury Direct will automatically redeem them when they reach the age of 30.
Interesting. Yeah, that sounds right. So my thought is if they are no longer paying interest, probably want to find a place to put that money so at least it's making you something. If they are still paying you interest, boy, oh boy, keep those babies around.
Let me ask you, Bob, do you need the money for, to as income? Do you need to use the money to go pay for stuff? Or were you just thinking, you're thinking about spreading out the tax or trying to save money on taxes? That's the only redemption option.
I was simply going to redeem them to lower the tax bite for later on and probably just give the money to the grandkids.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure. So there are other, if you're thinking about, you know, maximizing, you know, your estate, there are CD options out there that have what's called an estate put on them. So they're accruing interest in the same way that are, if you get a longer term CD, that then your heirs have the option to put that CD back to the issuer, whether that be like a JP Morgan or another company like that issues those, and they don't have to forego any interest that you've accrued or have any sort of penalty because it has an estate put. If you're thinking about that, there are other options as well to maximize your, you know, that sort of estate leaving, you know, where you can minimize your taxes, and those usually come in the form of different life insurance vehicles that you can use depending on your age and your health. You can get some of those that basically foregoes that money for a guaranteed amount. I can't tell you what the numbers are, but sometimes it's something along the lines of, hey, if you put $40,000 in today, when you pass away, your heirs are going to get $70,000 in tax-free money. You can't you don't get to take your money out. It's not accruing interest. It's just a pure, hey, we're leaving it to the grandkids sort of idea. I don't know your specific situation, but that'd be a question for and you're the advisor that you're working with, that, hey, look, this is what we're looking to do with this. Let's come up with a couple of tax managed or tax, I don't want to call it deferred, because we're not really, we're trying to get rid of it, trying to minimize the tax for leaving it.
Yeah, that might be better. I had only thought of UTMA, so maybe that would be a better idea.
Right, yeah, and UTMA is a great option if you're, you know, gifting to the kids, but the Kevin will tell you, it's a real pain when they actually start earning money in those UTMAs, because then they're subject to the kiddie tax, which is not great.
Yeah. Okay, thank you for the suggestions.
Yeah, you betcha. Great question, Bob. Thanks for calling.
Yep. And I know we'll go to a break here, but just one final comment is on that, Bob. I would tend to liquidate non-paying I-bonds up to the amount of your deductions, and do that over a year, a couple years, 3, 4, 5 years, what have you, and then you know, keep any ones that are paying as a good investment.
Yeah, I mean, 5% is, I mean, that's huge. Yeah. You know, on a guaranteed rate of something.
Gold for the right now. Yeah,
the next 10 years. And I don't know if we're going to see that kind of a rate again, you know, at least for a while. I mean, anything longer than having to buy a 30-year bond again.
Exactly.
All right, so we're going to take a break, and then we'll come back and let Kevin finish talking to us about the tax animal. But again, if you do have a question that's been keeping you up at night, whether it's a tax question, an estate question, or an investment question, please give us a call. 503-417-9595 or toll-free 877-733-1011.
We do investing simplified.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Coulson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future, and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Coulson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercoulson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercoulson.com. 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, here's Chuck Price and Bo Caldwell.
All right, thanks for listening. We are back with Investing Simplified. Once again in studio, Chuck Price, Kevin Stege, and Bo Caldwell. Kevin, I'd love to hear a little bit more about, you know, the tax animals investigation.
All right, sounds good. And again, we want your calls because that's addressing what you want to talk about. And before I bring you guys in on one topic, I am going to briefly talk about, and I didn't even tell you guys this was on the docket, loans and forgiveness of loans and cancellation of debt income. So, in general, we're going to get right into it. So, you are a lender. You're in business. You have maybe lent money to a supplier. You've made a business loan. That loan becomes uncollectible. So, you have the option to do what they call bad debt write-off. And you've actually lent the money. You're in business. Nobody, the person's not going to pay you. They go bankrupt, what have you. You get to take that as a deduction. So business makes sense. Well, how about us as individual taxpayers? We've maybe lent money to a relative, maybe a son or daughter for a home purchase or maybe a business endeavor that they have. And life kicks in and all of a sudden payments to mom or dad aren't as important. And now all of a sudden, you're seeing, you know, kids are now on the way and you're seeing, I don't think I'm going to be getting this money back. What can you do? Can you do anything? And there is a thing called non-business bad debt and write-off. And it is like a capital loss. It's a short-term capital loss that you can take on your tax return. And that's the Cliff Note short version. Crossing the T's and dotting the I's is a little more difficult, but it is doable. And we have done it, and it works. And basically what you have to do with that is, first and foremost, it needs to be a proper loan. You need to probably have had that in writing. Now, there is verbal agreements that work, but if you're trying to convince the IRS that this is not just mom and dad helping John or Susie, you want a true business, not a business, you want a true loan document written out, signed with terms that specifies that this is a loan.
And you probably have to be getting somewhere around fair market interest rate return.
That's right.
On them. So
that's right.
It's a legitimate loan. It's not just a, here, I'll give you this money, wink, wink, and you're going to pay it back to me.
Exactly right. Yep. So in that case, that's the first step. Second step is it has to be worthless. You cannot be able to collect from that in the future. If they think in the future that you could, it's not a worthless debt. It's not a bad debt yet. Just because somebody has defaulted on it doesn't mean it's not a bad debt. So you need to prove that it's worthless. Typically, a bankruptcy is very good proof. There are other ways, circumstances in life, the person's financial situation. It doesn't have to be a formal bankruptcy, but you do have to show that you're not going to be getting your money and it's truly worthless. Another step is you have to show how you have tried to collect that. You can't just say, like you said, Chuck, wink, wink, they're not paying me. Typically, what we recommend is a letter from an attorney or maybe on your own, if you can draw up a good legal document, demanding payment, and that documents that you have tried to collect on that. And then lastly, the last thing to do is to enjoy the write-off on your tax return if all those circumstances take place. So, and we've done that in various circumstances, and it does create, and sometimes you've lent a fair amount of money and stuff. So don't short yourself on that. But if you cross the T's and dot your I's, it can be a benefit for you.
Well, you know, the thing is about that is bad things happen to good people. Mm-hmm. Not always do people go out with the intention of borrowing money or investing money in a business with the intention that they're going to fail. In fact, they probably go in with high expectations they're going to succeed. And that doesn't always happen. I know I remember back a few years ago when we had people who were getting this massive phantom income from condominiums they bought, walked away from because the value of the properties went way down. And then the banks turned back and would tax back the bad lender who walked away basically from the real estate deal.
Mm-hmm.
The bank couldn't collect the money. The value of the property wasn't there. They got the property back, but the property value was way lower than the loan value. And that's when you got those people got hit with the passive income, which was not a good deal. But that's all a legitimate business deal. And nobody goes into business or nobody goes and tries to buy a house they dreamed of buying
mm-hmm.
with the intention they're not going to make the payments.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And definitely consider the scenario where you have lent money to somebody to help them out. It has nothing to do with business, just they've been a lifelong friend. They're down on their luck. You've lent them 10 grand to help them out. And you and that person know, and that person says, I am going to pay you back, I promise. And 5-6 years down the road, it still has not been paid back. That's the scenario we typically see. It would have been nice to, at the outset, tell that friend, hey, for my purposes, I would like to document this in a formal loan. You know, don't let it affect our friendship that I'm charging you 15% interest, but
then I'm turning into a credit card.
Exactly.
Company.
Exactly.
Yeah. It might at 15%.
Yeah. So, anyway, that is that.
So actually, Kevin, before we step out, we have another caller on the line. Sandra has got a probate question. So, Sandra, we'll do our best to answer that question. We don't have our probate expert Carl here, but you know, between the three of us, we might have an idea or two.
Thank you. I have a will written out. I have annuity and stocks and a home. If I name beneficiaries on those three items, does it avoid probate?
Well, when you add it onto the stock, you're going to do what's called a transfer on death. And that avoids probate and goes directly to your named beneficiaries. You can do the same thing on a bank account. You can also do, and again, I'm not trying to practice law here. I only know from working with Carl for about 25 years. You can also, if you don't want to do a trust, you can do what's called a codicil on your real estate. And that's like adding a TOD on the real estate, and that will avoid probate as well. So pretty much everything you've mentioned, you can add a beneficiary on it. And as long as you have a beneficiary, they should go directly to those beneficiaries and avoid probate.
Okay, so so if I have beneficiaries named, I don't have to do the codicils. Did I hear that right?
So the codicil is for the real estate property because bank accounts or, like you said, stock accounts, you can establish what's called a transfer on death or a payable on death. It depends on where, you know, this is something that's really esoteric, but it depends on where the company that is holding the money is based in what state, because sometimes they have beneficiaries on those accounts and sometimes they have transfer on deaths. Here in Oregon, we have a transfer on death from that. But it operates the same way, but you have to make sure that it's an official document from the company. So if you have the stocks at Schwab, make sure that Schwab is giving you their transfer on death form. And then they have that updated and verified, and then that'll be the transfer on death. For the real estate property, that's where you need the codicil, which should be pretty easy. If you have a will, if you just talk to your estate attorney and say, hey, I need to add this codicil, it's a pretty easy document for them to add to the backside of the will for your real estate.
Oh, thank you so much.
You betcha.
Yeah, good questions.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question because, you know, a lot of people, not everybody needs a living trust. Not everybody, depending on the value of the assets they have. And if you have very simple assets, a lot of times you can, you know, here's the one thing a lot of people get confused about. Probate, you have to file a probate. And what a will does is a will says how I want my assets distributed through that probate. Okay, so having a will basically says, here's my assets. If they go through the probate process, here's how I want them divided up. However, most beneficiaries, in fact, all that I know of, historically and tax-wise and court-wise, beneficiaries stand up in court. And if you have a beneficiary, like, for example, on an IRA, if you have a beneficiary on an IRA, you can fight till that very warm place freezes over. You're not going to win and change that beneficiary.
Right.
Because that beneficiary was done with, if the client was of a sound mind at the time they did the beneficiary, it's there. That whoever they name is going to get that money. Sometimes we don't like that, but it is the way it is. And so having properly drawn agreements with POD, paid on death, or TODs, transfer on death, can help avoid probate. No question about it.
Help avoid any of that confusion, especially in a time, you know, we talk about this all the time, if clients have, they lose someone or they're in that, you know, probate situation, as we try to tell them to wait 6 months before you make any big decisions because you don't want to have to make those decisions in this really tough time. And I believe we'd have to ask Carl, but I believe what the beneficiary term is, I believe it's called a will bypass. So it bypasses whatever is in the will. It trumps, like you said, whatever is actually placed in the will, as long as, like you said, as long as it's been properly filed. But that's a big thing we mention to clients all the time. It's good to check with your financial institutions to make sure that your beneficiaries are set up correctly. Even if you think they are, if it's been 4 or 5 years since you've had it, just like you want to update your will, just like you want to update any of the other stuff, is to have that check with your financial professional. So we're going to take our last break here, and then we'll come back with more of Investing Simplified.
Price Financial Group, Wealth Management. Price Financial Group, Wealth Management. We do investing simplified. Financial Group, Wealth Management.
Navigating through today's financial investment world can seem pretty scary. Now, here's the good news. Chuck Price, president of Price Financial Group Wealth Management, introduces a new revolutionary concept that will change how you invest now and in the future. It's called Asset Lock. Asset Lock monitors your investment accounts 24/7, 365, and alerts you when action needs to be taken. And now, Chuck Price offers Asset Lock. At Price Financial Group Wealth Management, we believe all our clients deserve to have Asset Lock monitoring their accounts. So call Chuck today or online at pfgwm.com and learn how you can get Asset Lock on your accounts today for free. Price Financial Group Wealth Management, because the smart investor knows what you don't know can hurt you.
Simplify.
Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, here's Chuck Price and Bo Caldwell.
And we're back with Investing Simplified. Thanks for staying with us. If you've been with us this long, we've had to interrupt Kevin a couple of times during his animal investigator segment. So I'd like to let you finish up. You said you had some items to talk about with Chuck and I.
That's right. Well, I read an article on the infamous 4% investment rule. I learned a little bit on that too, and I'm sure you guys know all the details. But apparently, that was put together, that principle was put together from a MIT guy who back in the early 90s basically came up with the scenario where if a person retires and they were to take 4% that was increased every year by inflation and their portfolio was invested 50 to 75% in stocks, how long would that last? And under all of his scenarios that he ran, the worst case scenario was that would last 35 years if you looked at the various stock market returns over all the years. So this article, a guy basically decided to rerun the same study that this guy had done and see if it was still valid with our last 20 years in the stock market, if you will. It's different and so on and so forth. And he seems to think, you know, because some people have been saying, well, hey, we need a 3% rule now because of the way returns are going. Mm-hmm. But it appears that the 4% kind of still holds water. And I was curious what you guys' perspective was without giving away any of your secret recipes.
I like that he's keeping our secret recipe secret. That's
I
good.
Like that. That's right. Yeah, that's why it's called a secret recipe.
Well, I'd be off the show if I gave out your 11 herbs and spices.
There you go. Well, you know, the funny thing is I've heard numerous shows on the radio mm-hmm. and numerous financial people talk about the 2% rule
oh, wow.
and 3% rule. And for a long time, it's been less than 4%. And I've always thought 4% was a reasonable rate of return. In fact, we've always, from the time I've been doing been in practice, we've always talked to our clients about being conservative investors and having a diversified portfolio. We've always used as a benchmark that we think 5% is a reasonable rate of return.
Okay,
if you're totally diversified and you don't put yourself in a position where you have to take money out of a risky investment to live on, and that's the key is how you structure your portfolio. It's not just what you have in your portfolio; it's how you manage the money and the assets in that portfolio, and what you have earmarked for income or for growth. And honestly, if a person investing money doesn't have some money in the market for long term growth, you're missing an opportunity, because long term, stocks outperform everything pretty much, and you know, real estate on sometimes is there, sometimes it isn't there, but I can tell you the stock market historically long term has been a great place to return money, and long term investors need to always have some money long term. You know, we don't know. I joked about this in this a couple of weeks ago here. My oldest living client passed away. She's 102. And when I talked to her right around her birthday this last year when she was turning 102 and we were sitting down talking, she said to me, if I had known I was going to live this long and have this much money, I would have had a heck of a lot more fun. And, you know, we don't know. don't know. But the one thing is, she had more money than when she retired. She invested wisely. She diversified her money. She spread the risk out. And we had a strategy so that she didn't have to take money out of her long-term investment. And as it turned out, you know, because she's been a client of mine since she was about 60, as it turned out, 40 years is a long time to invest money.
Yeah. Well, the 4% return, from what I understand, that is what, like you said, it's 4% is the longest it's going to last you is 35 years. And that's, I always thought it was at 60-40, you know, the traditional 60-40 portfolio. But, I haven't delved as deep into it. But that is a rule of thumb that a lot of advisors use and talk about as a safe withdrawal rate is 4%.
Mm-hmm.
I really like what Chuck just mentioned when we talk about that. That assumes, hey, we're going to put it in the 60-40 portfolio. We're going to let it roll, and we're just going to be pulling 4% from the portfolio overall, which feels like a lack of a strategy, although it's better than having no strategy. But we like to, like Chuck said, have a strategy that says, here's how long your money needs to last. Okay, so let's back up from how long your money needs to last. Let's look at how to make it last. But most folks don't just want their money to last. They want to be able to leave something behind to their kids, too. And I've never had, you know, although Chuck mentioned he had a client that it did sound like a little bit like she was complaining that she had too much money. But it's more that she didn't have enough fun. But most of the time,
you don't have
folks that complain they have too much money at the end of their retirement, at the end of their lives. The call you don't want to have to make is to tell someone they can't live the kind of retirement that they had planned, or they can't live the lifestyle that they had. The biggest goal we have for people when they retire is I want you to at least maintain, if not enhance, what your current lifestyle is, right? So, mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of rule of thumbs that people use. They say you've got to save up so you can have 80% of your working income in retirement, or you can take 4% safe withdrawal rate. There are calculators that you know, we use, because it's called the Monte Carlo simulator. That's what you're mentioning with the market simulations, and it gets its basis in Las Vegas. It's what Las Vegas uses to always win. So they run 1,000 simulations, but they say, here's of the 1,000 market simulations over the next 30 years, based upon your risk mm-hmm. that you're taking in the market, so 60-40 portfolio. The bad part about that is it's only using back-tested numbers, right?
Exactly.
The one thing that we can tell you that, you know, it's never going to happen again is you're never going to have the exact returns that this fund did last year, right? It might be close, might be similar, but it's not going to be the exact thing. So, you know, using 4% is a good rule of thumb to make sure we're not taking out too much. But I think it just proves the point that you need to have an active strategy and be working with a financial professional to reevaluate it each year, because you never know what mm-hmm. what's going to happen. And a lot of times people spend more in their earlier years of retirement than spend less on
absolutely
fun
do.
Things. But yep. the one cost that does go up is medical costs, right? Mm-hmm. Because as you get older. So, and you never know what, like Chuck said, you never know what's going to happen. So, mm-hmm. But that's interesting that they, usually I trust that, you know, the folks that are definitely smarter than me that are running, you know, MIT is.
Exactly.
That's
a big deal. Well, that spending.
Yeah, but here's the thing, you know, and I've seen a ton of financial planning software, and I don't want to say that Morningstar is wrong all the time, but they're not right all the time either.
Right.
And a lot of people come up with all these strategies, but the one thing is you can't account for, it's called life. Life changes things. And here's the reality about our clients as they get older. Clients are going to spend their money when they retire to travel and do the things they planned on doing until they get in somewhere into their 80s, and some people it's their 90s. But at some point in time, you're not going to do all that travel. And the spending of your money, just like Bo said, the spending of your money then becomes a race of keeping your money and medical and those other outside expenses that you end up with. Mm-hmm. And healthcare is the real, real wild card. Nobody has any idea on. And that's the hard part. Kevin, how's somebody get a hold of you?
We're at baker-colson.com, 503-666-5569.
And I'll tell Carl stuff, because Carl's not here. He's got the weekend off. But you can reach Carl Jepson at 971-229-0585. And he's located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue.
We're also located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, as well as 7105 Southwest Varnes Street. We now have a West Side location. We're happy to meet with you over there. Give us a call at 503-253-3000 or visit us on the web at pfgwm.com. Thank you so much for listening this week. We'll be back next week with Investing Simplified. God bless.
God bless, and all of you have a great week and be safe out there.
Hello, my name is Carl Jepson, estate planning attorney and co-host of the long-running radio talk show, Investing Simplified. My law practice emphasizes estate planning and probate. My mission statement is practical estate planning for peace of mind. This means that I listen carefully to my clients. I explain the various estate planning techniques and documents in the most understandable terms that I can. I try to make sure that my clients are comfortable with what we are doing together before proceeding, and I discuss my fees up front so that clients don't get any unwanted surprise. Estate planning and probate don't have to be that complicated. My experienced staff and I work closely with our clients to guide them through both of these matters in the simplest and most efficient manner possible. My office is located in the White Office Building at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 101, right across the street from Mall 205. My telephone number is 971-229-0585, and my website is carljepsonlaw.com.
You can listen to past shows of Investing Simplified or sign up for our free newsletter at www.pfgwm.com. This show was brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103, Portland, Oregon, 97216, 503-253-3000 or 877-50-PRICE. Investing Simplified is a registered trademark owned by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated.